Okay, good morning, guys. Welcome to the journey of delivering financial solutions in Azure for the Treasury. First off, I'd just like to say thank you very much for coming to the presentation. After yesterday's keynote with James Whittaker, I know he's speaking now, so I appreciate that you've come to see me rather than him, because he was very entertaining. So look, I'm just going to go through some stuff around where I work, who I work for, and a little bit about me. Going to talk around the financial operations change program that we're running at the Treasury and the Debt Management Office. I'm going to talk about the approval process that we went through to get our data into the cloud, which I'm sure a few of you might be interested in. Going to talk a little bit around why Azure and why IAAS, and then talk about where we've got to, and then the lessons learnt and some of the successes that we've had, and then what we're going to be doing in the future. So just really quickly, a little bit about me. So I am from the UK, I apologise, but I have been here since 2002 and I am a citizen, so I'm sort of, I have a foot in both camps, but I do support the All Blacks, so that's that's the most important thing. So just the other really other two things about me. I've been doing martial arts since 1994. So Michelle's keynote yesterday was a little interesting for me. And just before that, I had actually bought the Surface Pro 3. So yeah, that was really interesting. And the other thing is that my whole career has been based around SQL Server, web applications, and delivering solutions to customers. The other thing to note about me is that for most of the time, I've basically spent on the other side of the fence. So I've been a vendor. I've worked for a lot of vendors in Wellington and back in the UK. And so the last 6 or 7 months for me, it's been very different because I've been on the customer side. So it's been very interesting. Just another thing just to start off with, I was really impressed with the keynotes yesterday. The one from Steve Martin talking about Azure and what we've been doing and what they're doing and how they're planning, it resonated really well with me, and especially with what I'm going to talk about today. And also James Whittaker's very, very interesting presentation on data, and he used the phrase "data is the new oil." I've heard that statement, and you know, I've used it myself over the last 3 or 4 years, and it's nice to start to see some recognition of that. So I'm going to sort of not refer directly to those presentations, but you know, a lot of the stuff that we've done at the Treasury is based around some of those key core concepts. So the Financial Operations Group at Treasury. So basically it consists of three sort of departments. I'm going to start from the bottom. So the Investment Management and Asset Performance. They're a new team. They've just come over from the state sector, so I don't know a lot about them. The Export Credit Office deals with all of the external overseas investment and how they can get New Zealand companies to basically work with offshore organisations. And the Debt Management Office is the part of the Financial Operations Group that I work with, and they're basically responsible for funding the government. So it is quite an interesting group to work with, and a group of very interesting people. So you'll probably, if it hasn't already come out, there is going to be an article coming out by Rob O'Neill on ZNet today, talking about our legacy application, but also talking about this presentation and what we're doing. So we do have a legacy application that the debt management is run off. It is based on Access and SQL. I was quite shocked when I got to Treasury, but you know, the really interesting thing is, it works. It's been there for the last 15 to 20 years, and it hasn't let the Treasury down. And that's probably one of the biggest things to take away is that if you've got something that works, why change it? And just to talk a little bit about the scale of what the Debt Management Office does. Okay, can anybody here tell me what a yard is? Excellent. So one of the things that we as IT people do is when we go into organization, we talk about, we talk normally as though we're talking to IT people, and we use jargon. We use jargon all of the time. And we baffle business people. And in all of the organizations that I've worked in and all of the work that I've done, I've never had a group of business people be able to lose me in a conversation. But these guys at the debt management office, with all of the financial terms that they use, I was lost. But just talking about this, a yard is $1 billion, okay? And they talk about money, all of the time. So it's very interesting to listen to them, and they talk about yards and bucks. You know, bucks is basically 1 million Kiwi. So it's very interesting. So, 17,000 settlements, so that's payments going in and out of the debt management office in the last year. And in total, $135 billion worth of payments and $134 billion worth of receipts. So that's the sort of magnitude of scale that we're talking about here. Now, $1 billion doesn't really make a lot of sense. So I tried to figure out how I could relate this back to you. So basically it was like, okay, if you wanted to go out and buy a car, so we've probably got at least 100 people in the room. So $135 billion, what would that mean? So if you wanted to go out and buy a top of the range price, you know, about 50 grand with all the trimmings, that means everybody in here, so that's 100 people in here, could buy a brand new Prius every day for the next 75 years. So you could go out to the dealership, all 100 of you, and every day just go and buy a new Prius. Obviously, it doesn't include petrol, but, you know, that's the sort of scale that we're talking about. So, the financial operations group. So, look, why did we decide to change things up? There was some work done, there was some management change in the debt management office, and they realized that what they're doing today is not sustainable. They were running Access, it was cumbersome, and they wanted to do a lot more stuff. So just basically today was not sustainable, they needed to change. There was this concept of just taking the application that was written in Access and rewriting it in C# and basically doing a like-for-like replacement. But again, they did some work, and it was, that was going to be a poor investment in the future. So in addition to all of this, they had an expanded mandate. So they wanted to be able to do different trades. They wanted to be able to trade on different instruments and work in a different way. So with all of those, they wanted to start thinking about how to invest in information in the future. And again, this comes back to a lot of the stuff that James Whittaker was talking about in terms of data is the new oil. Investing in information is really the future, really the key. And lastly, it was about how we were going to deliver this. So why did we want to change? We wanted to change up how we did things at Treasury, and we wanted to move into a more agile way of working. So what is it that we've actually done? So we've really turned things up on its head, and we've gone for a hub-and-spoke model for what we're delivering. So right at the core of what we've got is our data vault. So this is a new thing that's been out for probably the last year, 18 months, and it's a new way of modeling data. And it's designed to provide long-term historical view of the data that we're capturing, okay? And this is really the core of everything that we're doing on it. Around that, we've got a series of our satellites or spokes, and that's where we start to develop and deliver the core functionality. Those spokes, basically, if you need data, all the data comes from the data vault. So that data vault becomes, and I hate the phrase, but the single source of truth for us. Okay. Now, what that data vault allows us to do is it allows us to, or the spokes actually around the data vault, it actually allows us to protect our data. Okay. So what we do is that we then go out, our spokes then go out to external agencies and external suppliers to basically deliver the functionality that we want. So we've got our treasury manager, which means that we're we're having data pushed from inside of treasury out to the hub for us. Our curves and rates manager is going out to Bloomberg to get daily rates. So we basically have a process for pulling the rates in. We've got a reference data manager that is going out to Cop Clark to get all of our holiday data that we need for calculating different things. And just recently, we have integrated with our first software as a service provider, which is VectorRisk. It's been a really, really big thing for us. It's been in the making for the last 6 months, but we finally signed them up, and we are looking to integrate with them over the next coming year. And they are a true software as a service. We're basically pushing data up to them. They're using their algorithms and their services to crunch all of our data, and then they're pushing it back to us. The nice thing about VectorRisk, they're in Azure as well. So yeah, it's a really good synergy for us in terms of what we're doing and the partners that we're working with. So how are we doing this? Three core tenets of what we're doing, and they all work really well together. So as I mentioned earlier, the first thing that we're doing is agile. And it's true agile. It's not just us working in a particular way and calling it agile. And that's really new to the Treasury and the Debt Management Office, but it's working really well. It's got really big business involvement and business backing, which is, again, really core. We're doing 10 weekly PSIs, which are potentially shippable increments. So the idea is that we're delivering into production every 10 weeks with two weekly sprints. We also have a governance board, which we have members of the ELT from Treasury that sit on, and we speak to them every month and do a board paper and basically make sure that they're aware of what we're doing. Now, one of the really key things about this is that our delivery is linked to our funding. Okay, so we went out and we got a set of money for a three-year program, but basically the program board every 3 months allows them, or based on that, it allows them to off-ramp at any different particular time. So after a year, we've delivered something, they decide that basically they've done enough and that we want to move in a different direction, they can off-ramp the project and go, no, we're not going to be funding this anymore and move forward in a different direction. So that's, again, another really key aspect of our delivery. So from that, we move into the rapid prototyping. I know Jaron mentioned this before, but this ability to fail fast is really important for us. So we are able to do stuff, try stuff out, rapidly prototype, learn from either successes or failures, and then go on to deliver business functionality. Now, a lot of people do this in a development cycle. So you're developing code, you're developing functionality. But we've taken that one step further, and we do it for everything. So we do it for all of our infrastructure, including all of our networking, all of our database structures and processes, our integration processes and methodologies that we're using, and, again, all of the business functionality that we're delivering. So it's basically across the board that we do this work. And then we come down to Microsoft, and they're really helping us in the top two. Okay, so we're using TFS Online. It's a full Microsoft technology stack, including all the development platform, and obviously we're using Azure to do this. So the approval process. Hopefully you can read some of that. So this started about a year ago, and we started off with the Treasury process. So they have a accreditation process that they go through for new solutions, so we started that. And then the first thing that you do is they start pointing you to the records advisor and talking to you about the data that you're going to be using and start getting to how are they classifying that data. So we went through that process. We then did a risk assessment so that we could understand the risks that we had on the project and where we might need to mitigate some of those risks. And then we did a really high-level solution design. What is it that we wanted to build? From there, we did two really key engagements, one with the GCSB and one with the GCIO. It's from a government point of view, it's really important that you talk to those guys as soon as you know that you're heading down this sort of route and get their input. They don't like it when you just spring up at the end and go, hi. So we did that engagement. We started talking to them. And then we did the hosting options assessment. So I'll talk a little bit about that in the next slide. a business needs assessment. So we really started talking to the business, what is it that they want to do? And then we went through the GCIO cloud assessments questionnaire. It's 100 questions, they call it, but by the time you've added in all of your B's and C's, it's more like 140, 150. If you would like some help with that, I'm more than happy to provide some help to get you through that. And then we went through the Treasury architecture review process. So Treasury has got a board that we go through, presented our solution architecture, and they basically looked at that and made sure that we weren't doing anything totally out of the ordinary, which was quite interesting because we were going to the cloud. Finally, in January, we got approval from the GCIO to move ahead with our solution. We got architecture board approval from the Treasury, and then we got approval from the CITO to move. And then lastly, we packaged all of our documentation up, highlighted all the bits about security, and sent it off to the GCSB, from whom we've not heard anything. And I am told that that's a really good thing, that if you don't hear anything, then you know, you're all good to proceed. So a little bit more about why Azure and why IAAS. So we went through the hosting options analysis or assessment that we did. And we looked at all of the different options that we had available to us. We looked at our physical infrastructure in terms of inside of Treasury. Could they provide us with what we needed? We looked at the all of government offerings, IAAS, and we also looked at Amazon Web Services. And my enterprise architect did a whole bunch of work around investigating all of these things. And again, Jaron stole my thunder in his presentation, if you were there. And one of the things around the physical architecture was around the whole question of what do you need? And, 9 months ago, if somebody had asked me what I needed for the project now, today, I couldn't have told them. And I'm going to go through our architecture in a little bit, and you also understand why that comes about. So a couple of other reasons why we went for Azure, and again, as Jaron mentioned in his presentation, there are effectively no barriers to entry. If you've got an MSDN license, you can spool up your $130. That's what I have because my premium, $130, and you can just start using it. And you can just get into it, and Jaron showed some really good demos about just how easy it is to get into Azure. Now, if you're not government, unfortunately you don't get this next one, but if you are government, there are a whole bunch of discounts that you get with the select agreement and other bits and pieces, so that's another really good reason. One thing that Jaron again showed in his presentation was the calculator. And now I don't actually use the calculator to do my forecasting. I've got it all in an Excel spreadsheet. But the thing is that I can forecast out basically 12 months of what my costings are going to be for Azure. It's really easy. You basically get the cost for 100 hours of SQL or 100 hours of VMs. You can basically work out the hours that you're going to need it. You multiply it out and you start to get a number. I've basically profiled out what my Azure usage is going to be for the next 12 months so that, you know, I can talk to my accountants and figure out how we're going to do this. So that's a really, really nice thing about Azure. Government is a Microsoft shop top to bottom, so it fits in really nicely from that point of view. And the cost, capability, and licensing. Just the ability to spin up a SQL Server and not have to worry about licensing is really key and really interesting. So why IAAS? I've had some conversations, IAAS, PAAS, different things, but we are working at the virtual machine level. And the reason that we did that is for the reasons up there. So the ability to port the infrastructure. If we wanted to move back to the government IAAS or back to in-house, we could very easily do that. We can lift up our whole infrastructure and just move it down. One of the things that Azure does have is SQL, but the services aren't provided around integration services, analysis services, and reporting services. And as we are a data-centric solution, that's three really key services. So that's another reason that we've gone down the IAAS route. And there are some security benefits, so it's a more traditional approach, and it's more visible for the people at Treasury to understand it's not just the cloud. So where are we so far? As it says down there, we're in our sixth PSI. We've done 28 sprints, and we have delivered business value. So just some key points that I've put up there. As I said, January 2014, beginning of the year, we got our GCIO approval. And we went into production with our curves and rates module in June. So we've spent a lot of time getting to that point. But now, as you can see, we went in into production in August with our link to Treasury, so we're now pulling information out. So we've been doing a lot of work, and it's starting to now ramp up, and I'm seeing that we're going to be starting to deliver business functionality every month or every couple of months now. And that's going to be the goal moving forward. A couple of other really key points on here. We engaged with an organization to do a security review for us. That was very interesting. So the first thing that you've got to do is you've got to contact Microsoft and say, can you turn off some levels of security because we're doing a security review, which just baffles me, something chronic. And the other thing is that they found... I just got the security review. thank you. And they had, I think, maybe four or five medium issues and about seven or eight low issues, and that was it. And one of their medium issues was your data is being hosted outside of New Zealand. It's like, really? The last thing of note is our IT managed services partner. So we've gone through the all of government managed IT managed services panel, and we've selected Fujitsu to help us out. Yeah. to help us with our IT managed services moving forward. So we're going to be engaging with them over the next 2 months to get that in place. So we're really happy about that. Okay, so now we're going to start getting into a little bit more of the technical aspect of what we did. So this is where we started. This was me, and I started off with one development machine. Really easy, just spun it up, used all of the standard portal, didn't use any PowerShell scripts, just ran it up and off we went. That quickly changed. And so from a development environment point of view, we basically put in AD into our environment so that we could do some good security. We added a whole bunch more development machines so that all of my team could get onto and start developing. And we put in SQL Server as our data-centric solution. That was the start. From there, it quickly expanded upwards. So we went into our application layer. So we put in IIS. We put in integration services and reporting services at a different layer. And lastly, we put on a demilitarized zone so that basically we had that level of security and demarcation. From there, it was really quick. So from there, we went into test, and we built test. We changed it up slightly from dev, and we added some more redundancy across our boxes. So we added redundancy across our SQL, across our RS, and across our application routing layers. We added in some load balancers, both internal and external, but that was all in our dev environment, so that was quite nice. We got that all set up, ready to go. Then bang, we put UAT in. And literally it was, we know how to do this, just spin it all up. And by this time we had PowerShell scripts. Basically we had our Active Directory, we knew all of our service accounts. So our UAT environment probably took us less than 3 days to build. All up, getting it sorted and everything else. And just a note on this, as we went test environment and building that from a SQL point of view, I was probably rebuilding my SQL environment every 2 to 3 days. Oh, crap, I got something wrong. Do I just leave it and try and fix it, or do I just blow it away and start again? And with Azure, that's exactly what I did. I want to make sure that my environment is as best as I can make it. So if I can start from scratch every time, and I've got a PowerShell script that I can just run to start it up and install it, that's what I'll do. And that's what we've got now. And then we went into production. When we got the sign-off, we basically created our production environment. As you can see, there are a couple of differences. We've added in a production AD, and we've put in a production remote machines. But again, our core infrastructure is exactly the same as UAT and exactly the same as test, which, as all good developers should know and system people should know, is that's how you develop software. Okay, so that's what we've done. And just to really give you a full, better picture, that's what we've got. And I'm going to now talk a little bit more around each of our different layers. Before I do that, when we were building this stuff, and as I said, I started off with a single machine, and when you spooled it up, they talk about cloud services and storage and availability groups and all of these things, and you just go, yeah, I don't care. I just want the machine, please. I just want to see it. You soon start to realize that those things are actually quite important. So we ended up doing quite a lot of design around how we would actually structure our Azure environment around our cloud services, around our storage accounts, around how we would use availability groups and all of that sort of stuff, and using the power of Azure for what we needed to do. So we did some work around this and around our virtual networks, making sure they were all set up correctly with subnets and everything else. So it was some really good learnings came out of it. So our management zone, so we did a whole bunch of work around our network. As I said, we've got separate networks for dev, test, and production, with a whole bunch of series of subnets to separate out different bits and pieces, like you would normally do. If you're a network engineer, that's what you would do. I'm not, so I just gave it to somebody else. And then we basically have this management zone. So one of the key things that we did is that from an Azure point of view, you have endpoints on all of your VMs. And what we made sure of is that all of our machines, and if I just go back, so all of the machines bar the two remote access machines, you can't get into. You cannot touch them from Azure. In fact, you can't touch them from anywhere. They're basically completely locked down. If we lost our remote access machines, you couldn't get into our environment. Well, you can, but you can add them back in. But, without adding them back in through the portal, you just can't access the machines. So it's really secure because you just can't get in. The only one that we do have is we obviously got port 443 open for the top so that people can come in via our web service, for our web services and stuff. But apart from that, our remote machines are basically the only way into our infrastructure. Active Directory. I've done a lot. I installed AD. I just click next, next, next. I don't know a lot about it. But that's really nice. It's just everything that we've done has been standard. We've not tried to customize it. We've not tried to do anything fancy. So the administrative zone, again, really simple. We've got an external load balancer that is provided by Azure and availability groups. We've got basically two machines that do our application routing. They're a full master, fully meshed topology. Again, my solution architect wrote that down for me. And basically, we've got replication going across both of those. So we can deploy onto one, it deploys directly onto the other, and our file system is replicated as well. We're using HTTPS SSL for everything, and we've also got MASSL set up for our link to Treasury as well, so that's very, very secure. And we've got a public internet cert, so it all looks really nice for our users coming in. And also, this is where we do all our authentication, so everybody's being authed back to AD. Our application zone, so this is where we have got our integration services. This is where we do all of our heavy lifting and our reporting tier. So at the moment, we're just using a native installation of reporting services for what we're doing. And then we've got our application tier for our websites, our web services, and all that sort of connectivity. And we've got an internal load balancer for our integration services back down into our application tier. And then we come down to our data tier. So as I said, no external endpoints for this. We've got an internal load balancer. We are using SQL boxes from Azure, so we've just spun up standard SQL licensing. For our dev, test, and UAT, We're not using the SQL, the core standard SQL Azure boxes. We've basically just done standard Windows Server 2012 and used our MSDN license on top of that, which costs a hell of a lot less, which is very nice. So this is only our database engine servers. We're using Windows Auth only, so no SQL authentication whatsoever. We're using failover clustering on Windows with failover clustering on SQL. Availability groups inside of SQL, so all of our data is replicated across. So we were doing this. We were talking about DR when we were going through this process. And as Jaron mentioned, all of the data in Azure is replicated three times. And if you're geolocated, which we are, it gets replicated another three times in a different place. Now, for us, we are replicating our data across two different machines. So effectively, we've got six copies of our data in production in the West Coast, and then all of that stuff is replicated. So we've effectively got 12 copies of our data being stored up there. And if that's not enough, then I really don't know what is. One interesting thing that we came up with was around SQL Server and the availability groups. One snag is that you've got to use an external endpoint for availability groups, which we were not happy with. So we implemented a small workaround to be able to use an internal load balanced endpoint. I will be having words with Microsoft to help us get that changed, because it is a quite a big hole for us. We definitely didn't want to have to go out of our environment to come back in for load balancing. Yep. Oh, let me just go back. So one of the things about this also is our ability to both scale out and scale up. So we are, at the moment, we're not using a hell of a lot of data, and we're not using a hell of a lot of processing, but we always want the ability to go out. I'm pretty sure that the work that we're doing is going to grow. We're starting to pull lots more data. So I'm pretty sure that in the future, we're going to want to do both the scale out and the scale up. So, and again, with the Azure environment, it really is a great platform to be able to do that. So the lessons learned and our successes. Hey, look, we went through a really big process learning about how to do the cloud approval. As I said earlier, I'm more than happy to have those conversations with people about how we can help in that way and ease the pain. Not saying that it is painful, but you know what I mean. But on the flip side of that, it was painful, but it's been a really big success for us. We're there in production using it, and we got all the sign-off that we needed. Microsoft Azure. We couldn't have done this without Azure, really. You know, I couldn't have even defined our infrastructure 9 months ago, let alone, you know, what we're going to be doing in a year's time. So the ability for Azure just to spin up servers and do stuff. Talking of which, I had a developer come to me last week and go, our dev SQL box, it's being smashed. Can we add another machine in and take off our ISS load, SSIS load onto another machine? Yeah, sure. Made sure that I had the budget for it, spun it up. I've put it into the network. I've just got to hand it over to the developers for them to move the stuff across. Simple. And it's been really, really easy for us to do that sort of stuff. The agile project approach. The Treasury has really embraced agile, and it's been really good for our project. And as I said, we are doing true agile. We're making sure that we're doing our backlog, our stories, we're writing it up, we've got test cases and acceptance criteria, we're working with the business. And that's been a really positive story coming out of the Treasury around this whole change program. Some lessons learned, as I said, I mentioned the SQL load balancing in Azure. That was something that we didn't like, and we've learned a lot around how to do that. And that whole multipath infrastructure, you know, I can take out half my infrastructure and basically everything will still work. There was a small issue with Azure a few weeks ago, and I walked in and everybody came into the office and like, oh, you know, Azure's gone down and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I just looked at my machines and everything was still working and I could still access it and nothing had changed. So, yeah, it's been really good. So what's the next steps for us? So as I mentioned, Fujitsu, we're going to be integrating with them. We're going to be looking to put SCOMA in our environment, working with them to implement change management processes and make sure that we fully understand and can fully see our environment and have it in a nicely managed scenario. So that's definitely going to be a bit of work over the next coming months. Thank you, Fujitsu. Additional business spokes. This is just the start. We're looking at implementing management reporting, and we're going to be going out for accounting and trade capture, and we're going to be putting a whole bunch more functionality and capability for the business into this environment. And that's going to be our main focus. But that's going to be supported by a whole bunch more technical capability. We've just embarked on putting analysis services in, and that's going to go into our application layer. So again, that's just going to be another server in that application layer stack that we can then use. We're looking at SharePoint. Yeah, we're going to put SharePoint into that stack for a myriad of different things, really around Power BI, most likely. The business that we have is really focused around data and around numbers. They use Excel a whole bunch, and that's one of the things that we want to do is actually provide them with a really good capability around data, so SharePoint and Power BI. And lastly, but probably a really important thing is as soon as Azure Australia is open for business, we're going to be moving our production environment down there just to make some of the security concerns go away. But, you know, just to go down to Australia and try and keep our friends over there happy. So, yeah, so that's going to be the next 12 months for us. So I just put this together because I think it's really important just to sort of summarize. The only reason that we've succeeded and achieved is because we have the backing of the business. My business sponsor is what is driving this project. He's the person that wanted to go to the cloud. It wasn't me, it wasn't anybody technical, it was him that wanted to change the way that we did things. Okay? And that's been really key for us. Okay? We're working in a true agile manner. We're not just doing stuff, as I said, and calling it agile. And we have the right team of people. I've got a great team of people. None of them are here because they've already seen this presentation, so they're off seeing other stuff. I've got a great team of technical people, and I've got a great group of vendors that I'm working with. But also, I've got a great team of business people that are involved in this project and really want to see this succeed. So the breakout session. So look, the Getting Foxy with Azure IAAS with Stu Fox, I recommend that you go and see that. And Jaron mentioned a whole bunch of other ones that I haven't put up here. And there are a couple of hands-on labs to go and have a look at and use as well. But I really recommend just spin up Azure and go and play with it. It's really good to get into. So normal resources and the obligatory complete your evaluation, session evaluation now and when. And so I'll just open it up for any questions.
Is there any legal constraints in regards to storing treasury data?
Nope. So we went through the process with the GCSB around and also inside of Treasury around our data classification. We are storing in confidence data. But we went through the whole process to make sure that it was all well above board and all we could actually go do that. So, yeah. I wouldn't know. I know that I don't know whether it's that the corporates could use it. I know that if corporates are going to be working with the government, they will have to go through the process. And I'm pretty sure that if you ask the GCIO, they'd give you a copy of the questionnaire that you could then use. Yeah, I don't think it's proprietary or anything like that. Yep.
Is this latest US Microsoft
in I don't know. I haven't got into that side of things. Yep. Yeah, development. So the full development environment, my guys don't develop off of laptops. You know, I can log in to my development machine with which I've got Visual Studio loaded on it, and everything is done from the cloud. One of the things that I keep joking with my management team is that I could pick up my whole development team and take them anywhere in the world. And the latest vote is for some island somewhere, maybe Fiji or Hawaii. But yeah, no, everything is totally in the cloud. Yep, exactly. As Jaron said, when you create a virtual machine, I've got a standard virtual machine that I can just spin up another development environment. Yep. Yep, so we're using TFS Online. So that's where all of our source code is. It's where all of our stories and backlog is stored. So yeah, everything is in the cloud. Yep. Nope. Not at all. Yeah, it's really good. I use it from home. Yeah, it's I don't see any difference at all. And the nice thing is that we've got the power of the VMs as well. So I started off with medium machines, A2 machines. People started complaining. It's not quick enough. So I just bumped them up. I just went, cool, you want large machines? I just bumped them all up to large machines and everything went away. So, and if I need to go higher, if I need to, you know, because we're actually using 2 people per machine as well. So, yeah. None. So, we've not made any changes to Treasury networking at all to achieve this. No, we currently pay for them 24/7. And again, I've done my forecasting based on that. And if we wanted to, we could obviously shut them down and start them up. And you know, people have been investigating PowerShell scripts to do that. The thing for me is that a lot of developers, the way they work is that they'll be doing stuff, they'll leave stuff open, and they'll want to come back to it the next morning. So having to save everything and shut everything down so that we can shut the machine down, for me, and really it comes down to that cost and hassle point of view. At the moment, the cost is it's just not worth it. Yep. Good question. We're not at the moment. So that's one of the things that I'm going to be talking to Fujitsu about. but yeah, no, we're going to be looking at backing up all of our SQL data through standard maintenance plans, and then potentially using the Azure backup service as well. So that again is in our plan. Yes. So yeah, the Treasury manager is, we're pulling a whole bunch of data out of Treasury and sending it up to the cloud, and we've set up basically web services and a data pump to basically collect that data and just send it up for us. So we're using MASSL to make sure that it's really secure. And as I said, the security review found no issues with that. In fact, Azure, well, our systems were so secure that they couldn't actually even break into it, even when they had the passwords and the certs. Any other questions? No? Oh, yes. Yeah, if you'd like to come and see me, I can definitely tell you how we did it. So, yep. No, not at all. We can literally lift up. We can script out all of our machines. We lift everything up. We'll copy it across. Make sure the data's all there. Recreate the machines, and then just pull it up. Make sure it's all working. Then we'll just close down Australia. One of the other things that we're looking to do also, although it wasn't on the slide, is we're looking to move to SQL 2014. And, you know, it's going to be really easy for us because we'll just go along, we'll build our environment in parallel with the one that's running, we'll do it in dev, we'll switch everything over, make sure it works, and then we'll just close our dev machines down. And then we'll move into test, do the same thing, bring it up, everything good, close the old versions down. So from that point of view, actually moving to SQL, we're not going to do an upgrade, we're just going to do a completely fresh build. Yeah. Not other parts of the Treasury, other parts of the government. This is quite a big thing for the government, and we are the first to really spearhead this, but I'm thinking that it's really starting to open up the thinking for other government departments. Cool. Well, thank you very much for coming, and if you've got any more questions, come and see me.